We'll start the meeting. We do not have a quorum, so we can't officially call it to order. And also, since Chairman Huntley is in another meeting, and I was on first to be on the agenda, we're going to start instead with Representative Shumpert's bill, House File 1587. And I will move House File 1587 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the final omnibus bill. Representative Shumpert.
Thank you, Representative Hodge. Committee members, House File 1587 is asking for six additional full-time staff positions in the Office of Ombudsman for Older Minnesota. This is a program that was started in 1987. It provides ombudsmen to help seniors dealing with their rights as consumers. They're dealing with certain situations that develop in nursing homes and to resolve disputes that might occur between nursing home residents and the nursing home staff and institution. Minnesota used to be primarily a state that had most of its seniors living in nursing homes. That has changed gradually over the years, and now we have many more seniors, of course, living in assisted living facilities and in community-based and home-based settings. To address the need for ombudsmen in those different kinds of settings, we are proposing to add six more ombudsmen to the, let's see, I believe it's 13 that currently are hired under the Minnesota Board of Aging. And to talk a little bit more about the need for this program, I have two witnesses here today.
Welcome to the committee, and if you can state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Marge Turin, and I'm here to support House File 1587. I am with the Elder Care Rights Alliance, which is a nonprofit established in 1972, and we work with elders and persons with disabilities to assure that their rights and their services are meeting their needs. For a couple of years, the Ombudsman for Older Minnesotans was housed with our agency. And in 2003, they moved to the state, and so now the entire program is housed under the Board on Aging. These ombuds people are truly public advocates. They are funded by the public in order to serve the public and for the public good. They have three basic tasks: to, number one, educate consumers of care services who are elders or persons with disabilities, to advocate on their own behalf. They, secondly, create a visible and frequent and trusted presence in the lives of the care receivers so that they can prevent problems from happening. And thirdly, they do an exceptional job in entering into contentious situations where there is conflict between care providers and care receivers. And so they help resolve problems, conflicts. Now, the funding for the ombudsman staff comes partially from the federal government through the Older Americans Act, and they fund the staff serving persons residing in skilled facilities, skilled nursing facilities. The funding for persons residing in community-based services, which includes housing with service, assisted living, and in-home services, comes from the state. The reduction in nursing home beds has certainly spiked the development of participation of people living in other kinds of settings receiving care. And Representative Chumper mentioned that we are seeing a very rapid increase in people receiving community-based care. In 1996, there were about 300 assisted living housing with services settings. And they could house 1,900 people. Now, today, January 07, there are 1,100 such settings, and they have a capacity for 64,000 people. And so the numbers are staggering. In addition to these people, there are thousands of people receiving in-home services. At present, we have 9 ombudsman serving Greater Minnesota, and we have four serving the seven-county metro area. There has not been an increase in the state funding piece of this program since 1998. My agency is very much concerned about the increased risk to elders who are receiving care in these settings, mostly because of their isolation and their invisibility. Elder care abuse information is difficult to secure. As a colleague of mine says, it flies under the radar. But in Minnesota, between 1998 and 2003, there were reports of abuse on persons over 60 years of age that increased 10% per year. And in 2003, 45% of those reports focused on neglect. And so those are our concerns, and that is one of the reasons we are supporting this bill. Now, I believe that Minnesotans need to know not only that there is help available to them, but they also need to have confidence that when they ask for help, it will be forthcoming in a timely manner. One of the positions of the six being requested is designated for a director of volunteers. And this would be quite an asset to the agency because the volunteer program could go from about 130 to about 400 volunteers, and they could expand the reach of the ombudsman's office, and they could become frequent, regular, trusted presences in the lives of care receivers. Finally, I just want to also emphasize the federal financial participation piece of this bill. The federal government will reduce the cost of this bill by 40%. This is a very definite advantage to us. So I believe that the federal participation plus the increased number of ombudsmen would be a very good investment of state funding. It would expand the reach of this program significantly. And so I urge you to support this bill because the needs and risks are great and because they're increasing daily. And I'd like to now ask my associate to give us an example of the work of the ombudsman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deb Winder, and I am a board member at the EthiCare Rights Alliance. I wanted to share with you two quick stories. My mother suffers from Parkinson's disease and memory loss. She is in her mid-80s. In the past 5 years, she has resided in two assisted living facilities here in Minnesota. In the first facility, her friend, who was in her 90s, was sexually assaulted. The assault was covered up by the director. I received great help from an ombudsman, Jim Dossel, who came to the facility and actually investigated the situation once I uncovered the situation. This ombudsman verified that the assault indeed did happen and then helped guide me to ensure the safety of my mother and the other residents of this facility. In the second facility where my mom currently resides, in the last 13 months, she has fallen 16 times. Four of those falls have required hospitalization. One fall resulted in a broken hip, and she was not able to walk again. I checked with the Minnesota Department of Health about the statistics regarding falls in memory care units. There is none that is heard of. There are no statistics that are computed for this, which means we do not know how widespread this problem might be. I really am supporting this bill in hopes that ombudsman increased presence in these facilities might help to prevent and resolve some of these problems. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chumper, our witnesses, do you have any, you've given me an illustration of what's happened to your mother, Ms. Wingert. Are the ombudsmen here that are part of this bill or that we could get some testimony from?
I think we have some ombudsmen right over here.
Okay, I'd just like to hear from one of the ombudsmen of their work in the field here regarding the older Minnesotans.
Hi, Maria Michelin, and, Mr. Chair, and I am the acting state ombudsman for older Minnesotans.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, is it Ms. Mitchell?
Michelin.
Michelin. Can you give us a little background of your, I take it there's, what, 9 ombudsmen that work with the Elder Care Rights Alliance, is that correct?
It's 9 ombudsmen that serve the entire state of Minnesota under the Office of Ombudsman for Older Minnesotans.
And Ms. Michelin, could you give us kind of a background of what you all do as far as, there's 4 here in the Twin Cities and 5 outstate or greater Minnesota. How many cases do you have yearly or on a biennial basis with the elder care?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, we have last year we had 2,000 complaints that we investigated across the whole state. Of those complaints, we were able to resolve all but about 5% of them, either fully resolved or partially resolved to the satisfaction of our clients. Our client is always the person who receives long-term care services, even though we get information about problems from family members and from facilities themselves, as well as from the person who actually receives the care.
So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Mitchell, you're asking for another 5 or 6 full-time ombudsmen to be reduce the caseload or help you reduce the caseload?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, we're asking for these additional staff people so that we can better serve people who are receiving their long-term care services in their own homes or in housing with services assisted living settings. Because we primarily have been operating in the nursing home arena, where everyone knows that we are available. Our signs are posted there. They're required to be posted. People know what our services are. We know where we can find our clients. They're right there in those 392 nursing homes. Now that we have started to rebalance our care system and people are starting to receive their services even in their own private homes, or they're getting them in housing with services settings, which have increased tremendously over the time since they first started registering in 1996, I believe there were 390, and now yesterday I looked on the Minnesota Department of Health website, there were 1,182. So there's almost twice as many people receiving services, with around 64,000 units in housing with services as there are in nursing homes. And then there's thousands of people that we can't even identify all of that get their home care services right there in their private homes. And we are mandated under state statute to serve all of those people, but it's an almost impossible task when you have only 13 statewide.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
Ms. Litzlin, you mentioned that you had 2,000 complaints last year. According to this elder care rights, it shows that the caseload must be coming down because it shows 8,275 abuse reports. So you're saying 2,000 and last year 2,006. So you must be doing something very successfully to see that caseload come down.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, those statistics aren't from our office. Those are reports that go to the counties in the common entry points. Those are their records, not ours.
So, Mr. Chair,
just Representative Chumper wants to
speak. Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think their biggest concern is that, you know, because they've historically operated just in the nursing home settings, there's many people in the assisted living settings who are receiving services in their private home who are not even aware that there is a group of ombudsmen that they could file complaints with and talk about some of the problems they're having. I think that's their biggest concern. And, you know, the funding for this has not been increased since 1998. And, again, the current ombudsmen are pretty much restricted, if I'm correct, to the nursing home setting. So there's twice as many people out there now getting community-based services as well as services in their home who may not even be aware that ombudsmen are available to help them. So how would they know how to even or who to file a complaint with or to raise concerns with? And that's that's the biggest concern. They want to start getting out to these other settings from what they traditionally have been.
Mr. Representative Anderson. Mr. Representative Chumper, do you have some testifiers of individuals who have not been accessible to the ombudsman that are in assisted living, or do you have any testimony of that situation where people who are not within the...
Sure.
Okay. You mentioned that you're trying to reach out to a group, but I'm not hearing anybody saying that they need it, so as far as testimony.
Fair point.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Now, Representative Chumper, could you tell me, because I see you're adding this appropriation to the base appropriation. What is the governor's position on this as far as his proposal? What is the target? I mean, what is your base figure right now? And how much will that add to the base?
About $259,000.
Ms. Mitchell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. It's about $259,000 is our base right now.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Ms. Mitchell, is that per year or is it a biennium?
Per year.
We do have some other questions. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Sunfer. I think this is an area that we really do need to do a lot more work. And, you know, while we've had home community-based services for over 20 years, but most of the people have served, or many of them have been served under the elderly waiver and alternative care program where they have a county case manager. And so there is someone that they have a connection to beyond the contracted service provider. But now we're transferring many of those responsibilities to health plans, a much more corporate sort of model with a little less, you know, we'll see how it evolves. But we also have a lot more people who are private paying because they have higher incomes or higher pensions than the people who retired 15, 20 years ago. And I think this is a really great protection for those individuals who are stepping up. And I know in the metro area, we have overbuilt assisted living. It'll eventually get filled because the demographics are there, but we've actually ended up with more facilities and more opportunities than can be filled, and that always creates a different situation. But I do think we should also acknowledge, to your questions, Representative Anderson, that a lot of the vulnerable adults reports that may be included in that elder rights numbers are filed as Vulnerable Adults Act reports that may go to counties for investigation. So it's a combination, probably, of reports or complaints that are filed locally under the Vulnerable Adults Act and ones that go to the Ombudsman's Office. But I'm really encouraged. I haven't heard as much about the volunteer component of this, and I noticed that you're going to be really increasing the volunteer commitment here, so it's beyond the staff. You're going to be magnifying that. If you could just speak to that for a moment.
Do you want to work?
Surely.
Ms. Thurman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The volunteers can be the eyes and ears of the staff ombudsman in these new models of care. And that's why I think this will be a very beneficial bill for our care receivers. They simply multiply the energy and the observations that the professional staff can make. And then they, of course, if they see a serious problem, can refer that to a staff ombudsman.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Chumper.
Yeah, just to clarify a little bit, maybe we didn't do that previously, but of these six positions, the sixth position is going to be completely committed to being a full-time volunteer, and currently they have about 130 volunteers working within the ombudsman system, and they're hoping to bring that up to about 400 volunteers, and again, out in the assisted living and home-based services, by virtue of having this person, this one of these ombudsmen, spend their full time acting as the volunteer coordinator. So, in answer to your question, Representative Loeffler, that's what's going to happen here. They really want to focus on trying to organize and facilitate more volunteers being involved in providing the, I guess you'd say, monitoring or being a presence so that people could file complaints or have issues resolved somehow.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Loeffler made my point, and I just want to thank Representative Chumper for bringing this bill forward.
Good job, Representative Loeffler. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize if I'm repeating something for having stepped in late. Just for clarification, this would be on some services when you expand it to assisted living and in-home care for those who are not just receiving public support but also private insurers, all of the rest of it. And just a point of clarification, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. A follow-up to that then, if you will, Mr. Chair. Representative Waffle also mentioned the fact that a lot of these folks now are linked, at least in the public programs, are linked to the county systems. Are there also county ombudsmen in this category of services?
No, they're not.
Okay. And finally, if I may, Mr. Chair, just trying to get clear on the whole thing, is that in terms of what Representative Anderson raised, as an economist, I also be concerned a little bit about, you know, showing evidence of demand before providing new positions. I appreciate what you just said at the last point, that about these positions are really leveraging lots more people to develop the system, which sounds fabulous and a very good use of funds to leverage that network of volunteers. But at the same time, I presume we do have these needs in the assisted living sector or in the home-based sector, but in terms of allocating state funds, I know I would hesitate a bit unless I had some evidence of that emerging demand to allocate. So I just wonder if you could address that a little bit.
Well, one of our problems is that these data are hard to nail down. And so we can make the assumption, I believe, that indeed things that are putting circumstances that are putting these care receivers at risk are occurring, simply because that's the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And they're much more difficult to identify.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond to that.
Ms. Mitchell.
I can also tell you that in over the years that we receive an ongoing number of increased complaints from people receiving services in housing and services settings, for example. So last year we had over 150 complaints that we served there, and the year before it was 90. So as these facilities grow out in the community, and especially if people understand that we're available to help them, they know who we are, the demand for our services will likely increase. We would love to let more people know that our services exist, but if they then call us and we can't respond to them in a timely manner, how is that going to be helpful to them? And without the increased staff, we'll be able to meet their demand for services.
Thank you. Representative Trumper.
Yeah. Again, just one other point, Mr. Chairman. This roughly $1.1 million appropriation request will be offset by some what's called federal financial participation of nearly $400,000. So by virtue of budgeting this amount, we'll get about $400,000 back from the federal government. So,
on that, Representative Trumper, since the appropriation in the bill shows about $1.1 million, would the fiscal note reflect the federal participation and reduce the general fund expenditures?
For some reason, we did not get a fiscal note, even though I had not gotten one, so.
A fiscal note has been requested. But I'm just seeing on one of the handouts here saying that the actual state dollars would be $373,000 and $331,000.
Correct.
At this point, I am going to call the meeting to order since we have a quorum, and I will officially move that House File 1587 be laid over for possible inclusion to the final omnibus bill. Is there any further discussion? Any final comments, Representative Trumper?
Just that we can check in response to Representative Bunn's query about documenting this need. We can check and see if we can come up with some information like that if somebody has compiled that someplace, but it's difficult to do if nobody knows about your program.
Absolutely.
So, thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to the testifiers for being here today. Since there is no further discussion, all those in favor. It's just laid over. I'm sorry. The House File 1587 will be laid over. At this moment, we also have to move the minutes of March 8th, and Representative Abler moves the minutes.
So moved.
Any discussion on the minutes? If none being so, all those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are... and so.
Mm-hmm. Any actions anybody wants to reconsider this committee has done lately, or? That's in a hush. We have a bill up. But today is the day since Mr. Huntley's gone, so we can. If you want a lot of money, we can award as much money as you want, I guess. So,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's great being here today, and it's great being able to carry House File 971 for the Senior Corps program, the Foster Grandparent program, and the RSVP program. I think most representatives here have probably gotten several letters in their mailbox of wonderful volunteers asking for some additional help for their programs. These are great programs that help save money, that allow in-home care, that allow transportation, especially in rural areas. And I think it's important to note that these programs have not received an increase in funding since 1996. And not only that, they had a 15% cut in 2003. And in the overall context of the volunteer hours that are provided and the clients that are served, the request that we're looking here today, I believe, is minimal for what we get in return. We are looking for a $1 million state appropriation for each of the three volunteer programs, and that would total a total biennial appropriation of just over $6 million. Instead of me talking, though, on this program, I'd like to allow the program participants and the volunteers to speak, as they are much better advocates and can explain the great components of this. Mr. Chair, if I could hand it.
Sure, welcome to the committee. Please tell us who you are and then tell us what you want to say.
Thank you. My name is Jackie Johnson. I am the director of the Central Minnesota Foster Grandparent Program. Growing up, when I went to my father with a complaint or to point out something that I felt was wrong or unfair, his response to me would be always the same. He'd say, Jackie, anybody can complain, but come back here when you have a couple solutions to that, to your problem, and then I'll talk to you about it. While this was incredibly frustrating to me, it taught me a great deal about how I would view life. I could view life as having problems, and that I was stuck with those problems and they were unfair, or I could view life as having a set of circumstances and look for the many possible solutions. We are here today representing not the problems of Minnesota, which I'm sure all of you are very well versed on. We are here representing the thousands of solutions that Senior Corps has to offer in a manner that is results-oriented and cost-effective. I would like to give you a quick overview of the three Senior Corps programs. Foster grandparents serve as mentors, tutors, and caregivers for children and youth. They provide what most youth need more of: caring, nurturing, tutoring, and a whole lot of love. Senior companions serve as friends, assistants, and provide transportation to frail older persons who need help to remain living in their own homes, which is more desired and less costly than a nursing home. RSVP volunteers use their diverse talents to participate in home building and repair, tax preparation, insurance assistance, or emergency response. They tutor new immigrants and assist with office tasks. The list is endless. They are the Jacks and Jills of all trades. Senior Corps depends on collaboration. Currently, $1.8 million state dollars are leveraged as match to the $4.5 million federal dollars for Senior Corps. The decisions as to how these dollars are spent is a local decision based on the community needs and partnerships. These dollars are allocated to 24 different public and nonprofit agencies across the state, who in turn collaborate with 2,000 other agencies, such as schools, nonprofits, and public organizations, resulting in 17,000 senior volunteers providing more than 2.4 million hours of service. Senior Corps programs are very innovative. We take great pride in the fact that the Minnesota Senior Corps has continued to lead the nation in creative programming, partnership, and effective service. For example, recently the Central Minnesota Foster Grandparent Program and the Common Good RSVP in Winona have secured Programs of National Significance grants to address the mentoring needs of children of incarcerated parents. This is a new focus area for the Corporation for the National and Community Service, and they are watching closely to monitor these programs to help develop national programming guidelines. Another example is the Greater St. Cloud Area RSVP was one of the first in its country to have its volunteers become certified community emergency response team members, and this model has since been duplicated across the country. Senior Corps utilizes our greatest undertapped resources. Demographic changes are upon us, often referred to as the grain of America. While this is viewed by many as a negative trend, referring to the draining of Social Security or the wiping out of Medicare, Senior Corps is preparing for this with a positive, proactive approach. Hal Freshley of the Minnesota Board on Aging reports that in order to build communities with our aging population, we need to be aware of and responsive to the following. The number of retirees will outpace new workers. Retirees will demand good volunteer management. Retirees will expand civic and other opportunities and expectations for older people. Agencies need to ensure that the capacity of Minnesota's older citizens is not wasted. What Mr. Freshley is presenting around the state and hoping to create some awareness of is exactly what the Senior Corps programs are already doing. Senior Corps programs are results-oriented. Senior Corps is not just some feel-good program which provides socialization for older citizens. And we don't just think our volunteers make a difference in the lives that they serve. Statistically, we know that they do. We also know that having the opportunity to serve is life-changing for the volunteers as well. Since the mid-90s, Senior Corps has had intense training on incorporating programming for impact into project design and focusing on results. Senior Corps programs also have been trained extensively on and utilize outcome-based measurements, ensuring that so what questions can be answered with significant data. We know Senior Corps works. Our Senior Corps funding request. The state funding for Senior Corps began in 1971 for the Foster Grandparent Program, 1976 for the Senior Companion Program, and 1981 for RSVP. We have received occasional modest increases, the last being in 1976. In 2003, we were decreased by 15%. Current funding for Senior Corps is $1.78 million, with the governor's proposed 2% COLA of $36,000, which would bring the total to $1.8 million. We are requesting that each of the three Senior Corps programs funding be increased to $1 million along with a COLA adjustment. The $3 million request is the same amount as if Senior Corps would have received a 3% COLA since 1996. What will these additional dollars buy? Mileage reimbursement will be increased to a more reasonable level. The average Senior Corps volunteer receives 29 cents per mile. However, many RSVP volunteers are not able to have their mileage reimbursed or they are capped. With today's gas market, many seniors simply cannot afford to volunteer. New foster grandparent placement assignments will be emphasized in early childhood settings to help close the achievement gap. Senior companions will be able to serve more frail elderly that are considered near poor and who do not receive elderly waiver programs and tend to fall through the cracks. For RSVP, the increase will enable more volunteers for home and community-based services to support independent living in our older population. The dollars will be used to reimburse costs such as serving home-delivered meals, caregiver respite, and transportation programs. We will continue to partner with agencies to provide the volunteer force to meet the needs across Minnesota by expanding the opportunities for a greater number of retirees so we can continue to utilize the resources that they have to offer us. Minnesota Senior Corps programs are truly worth a million, and I'm sure you're waiting to hear from some of them.
Thank you. Gottwald, do you have a question while they're coming? Oh, just taking a shot. Welcome to the committee. Please tell us who you are, and we're happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you. I'm privileged to be here today. My name is Irma Peterson, and I'm a foster grandparent at one of the elementary schools in Princeton. And the foster grandparent program has really impacted my life. I am a senior. I am retired. Retirement's a good thing, but I didn't care for it very much. I needed to be busy. So I was looking for some place where I was needed, because I needed to be busy. So I was thinking about volunteering, perhaps at the nursing home. That didn't appeal to me. Other places just didn't appeal to me. I read in the paper, I was looking for in the paper for an ad looking for seniors to help, and here, lo and behold, was the foster grandparent program. Just perfect for me because I love little children. So I applied. I am now in my sixth year of being a foster grandparent at the Princeton Elementary School. I love it. It's just exactly what I needed to do. I work with first graders, and I have chosen the first graders because they're so eager to learn. They want to learn to read. That's so important. So that's the goal that we're working on, is getting all the first graders able to read. Not all of them come ready equipped with reading skills. A lot of them are awesome readers, but there's those stragglers that aren't getting either the help they need at home or just are on a lower level, reading level. So I work with them one-on-one, and I work 4 half days a week. And I love it. It gives me a reason to get up in the morning, which is wonderful, because otherwise I get up in the morning and say, okay, I should do this. No, I'll do it tomorrow. You know, I always had tomorrow I could do whatever. But this is great. I get up in the morning and I feel good. I've never once said, oh, I wish I didn't have to go to work today. The kids are wonderful. And there's so many good things that happen. It's not only just for the grandparent or it includes the child and the grandparent too. I have many stories I could tell you about these little kids at school. I have one little boy that he came to school and he was transferred from another school, and he seemed to be kind of a loner. He kind of stepped back, and I asked his teacher, you know, is there something I can do? And she says, you can give him more attention because he's really delayed in his reading. So I worked with him day after day after day, and he had to work on his words. He didn't know how to sound out the words, so I spent a lot of time with him. Not long ago, he started reading his little book to me. First page he read, it was perfect. Second page, the same thing. He read, and we only had time for 8 pages. Everyone was perfect. He knew his word. He was so proud of himself, and I was even more proud, because I had helped him do this. There's a lot more stories than just this one that I could tell you. But it has changed my life, made me a happier person, gives me something to do, and my life is more fulfilled. And so we need more foster grandparents, because we've got a lot of children that aren't getting the use of a foster grandparent in the school. So anyway, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. That's a great story. Thank you very much. Who's next? Hello, sir. Please tell us your name.
Mr. Chairman, I'm James Miller. I live in East Bethel. Since 1999, I have been a senior companion volunteer in Anoka County. Following a weekly schedule, I am helping 10 clients ranging in age from 62 to 101 maintain a more independent lifestyle in their own housing. They live in the communities of Ham Lake, Coon Rapids, Anoka, Ramsey, Oak Grove, and St. Francis. The 3 of these people are legally blind. 5 of them have physical disabilities which limit their mobility after suffering strokes. Only a few have family members living within convenient driving distances. So I provide transportation for shopping errands, medical, dental, and eye appointments, and to social activities at senior centers. I am also able to help with reading and correspondence and play board games and cards for at-home recreation activities. I know that as elected officials you are interested in the welfare of all citizens, but the senior citizen often needs an extra helping hand. The Senior Companion Program in Minnesota, which, by the way, was the first of its kind in the nation 33 years ago and is now one of the largest, will continue to provide those helping hands. thank you for doing all you can to obtain additional support for the valuable service to seniors in our state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. And hello, sir. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, my name is Mark Skye, Lake Elmo, Minnesota. I'm with RSVP. I'm the RSVP Leadership Board. Having retired and being part of this infamous generation that is about to descend on you, the baby boomers, when I retired from 3M, one of the things that I sought was purpose and in direction. And one of the things that we have found that in working with RSVP is the looking at ways to engage this generation that I feel very proud to be one of the leaders of, and looking at finding ways to bring the skills and talents to the community. What RSVP is really doing is taking the skills and those talents and placing them into the other nonprofit organizations across the state. There is a tremendous number of us coming behind looking for purpose. I think the numbers and the facts and information that have been stated that if we become socially engaged, we become less of a burden on society, we become less of a burden on ourselves. The passion that we had in the 60s, I believe we can bring to the next biennium and into the future. We're really looking, and we really see organizations like RSVP for that opportunity to really look at a volunteering place that's really taking the individual and placing them where they can really bring their passion. Welcome to questions.
Thank you. 60s passion for the new millennium, huh? That's good. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Chair Abler. I won't ask a question. I'll simply give a strong endorsement. I'm very familiar with RSVP in our area and the Senior Corps program, and I can't think of a better way of bringing seniors and their desire to give back from their experience and their own need to be wanted to have that purpose you mentioned and the needs of young people. I mean, it's just a tremendous program. I realize this is a bit of a bump above the governor's proposal, and I could ask, how are we going to pay for this? But that's really up to... I realize this will probably get laid over and those decisions will be made a little later, but I think it's a fantastic program, and I thank you all for being here.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank all of you, first of all, for the wonderful work that you do. And there's a very strong senior volunteer program in Rochester, where I represent, and very successful. And, you know, I just can't tell you how important I think it is, the work that you're doing. Both for the people who are doing the work and for the community. I mean, it's really a match made in heaven, I think. And I did just want to comment that your presentation really kind of brings home to us the difficult job that we have this year, because there are so many wonderful programs like yours that really are deserving of funding, and that where the funds really will make a difference, and we're going to be really struggling with the amount of funds that we have, that we're not going to be able to fully fund a lot of things that we would really like to. And so, you know, that's a little bit of a downer, I guess. But I just want to again commend you for the work that you're doing and tell you that we, and I know the whole state of Minnesota, really appreciates it very, very much.
Thank you. Representative Tom.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I think we have a little bump in our proposal because we care a little bit more. And this budget session is going to take more than just us to do the work. The governor has to also have to be a partner in this to make sure that these folks get the proper funding. So,
thank you, Representative Bunch.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and I wanted to acknowledge my constituent, Mr. Skye, here, and welcome for coming, but also wanted to say that the quality of the testimony that you gave and the content of your stories just, again, is a testament to the role of seniors in our community or society and your wisdom and your generosity in giving back to our community. But also, personally, my husband and I have been involved in senior companion programs in the past, and I think all three of these types of programs, in terms of, again, the issue of leveraging, we talked about with the previous testimony about leveraging talents by adding volunteers, and here's a program where for a relatively small investment, we are just leveraging the incredible resources of the seniors in our community, where they can take their professional, personal, and just emotional and intellectual talents
into every aspect of our community, enhance all of our lives, and that it's a very worthwhile investment for us to make, and so I strongly support these initiatives. Thank you.
Representative Hush, do you want to, any other questions? I think that you're, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a statement here about the resulting gross savings of $208 million to the state as a result of the program in 2006. Do we have any information about, after the 15% cut in 2003, how many more people went into nursing homes because of those cuts?
And Ms. Johnson, do you have that, or Representative Hush, do you have any stuff? Representative Hush, go ahead, if you have an answer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, I don't think we can assume what the impact were from those cuts, but we do know that it increased the strain onto the program, and I can tell you from my own personal experience that many of our local units of government had to step up to the plate. As Mayor of St. Joseph, when we saw the 2003 cuts, I can tell you who was in the council chambers looking for an increased local participation. I think Representative Gottwalt could probably also attest to that in the St. Cloud area. And that's one of the things that makes this program great, is that it's a collaborative effort. It's not just a single source of funding. There's local dollars, federal dollars, state dollars. The volunteers do a wonderful job. And I wish I could quantify what the direct impacts were, but we just don't have that information.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen. The Minnesota Board on Aging did produce a report, and this may answer your questions, and it's summarizing the test of 2003 and the test that we were forecasting at that time. And I could get you and all the other committees a copy of that report.
Thank you.
Yeah, and one other question, Mr. Chair. The is there any private dollars that come in to this program at all?
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen. Yes. By the design of the grant, we need a minimum of a 10% match. So every place that has a foster grandparent, senior companion, or RSVP volunteer needs to contribute either with a monetary contribution or an in-kind contribution.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Thiessen and members, it's too bad we can't have the dynamic fiscal note that we would so appreciate to see where the different effects go across the state and the different... different places. Representative Hush, should probably move the bill for a possible inclusion. Representative Hush moves the bill for a possible inclusion. Good job on that motion.
thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the committee members, I just want to remind you about how great of a program this is. I can't explain to you the enthusiasm and the excitement that my foster grandparents in the city of Kimball have about this program, and the passion that they have, and just the commitment that they have to our young children. And we can multiply that with each of the program's senior corps or the senior companions. I hope you remember what you said to your constituents when you were campaigning this last summer. We all know that we have a limited set of dollars, but I think we probably all said that we have to spend our money wisely and we have to make the investments. If we can delay special education needs for our children, if we can delay the entrance into a long-term care setting for our seniors, we save money. The overall appropriation and request of this bill is minimal in the context of our overall budget. And I urge the committee to support this. I will be at the table when we put together our omnibus bill, and I hope that we can do the right thing on this. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, and thanks for coming, and thanks to the people in the audience who came to support the bill. So the bill is laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Hausman, I think you're up next.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Hausman. I will move House File 1170 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the final omnibus bill. And to your bill.
The Living at Home Block Nurse Program is a program that I have been associated with for many years. This was a program that was proven very early on, that it is a program that actually works. And then it was replicated across the state in all sorts of different communities. And some of the cost savings that we're going to talk about were proven early on in an audit that was conducted by the University of Minnesota. So we are proud to bring this program before you. Across Minnesota, there are 40 of these community-owned programs to provide services to keep people healthy, independent, and at home. And it provides, through organizing nursing care and volunteer assistance, it allows people to stay in the community, to prevent functional decline, to remain independent, and to prevent or delay spend down to public programs. These programs provide services for almost 13,000 Minnesotans. The kinds of services provided are homemaker, advocacy, transportation, friendly visits, health education, health promotion, and so on. Every dollar of state funding is matched more than 145% by other funding, including federal, local, and private dollars. Neighborhood volunteers provide more than 118,000 hours of service. And the kinds of saving to the state in long-term care dollars are quite amazing. The average cost to serve an elder in these programs is $457 per year compared to $53,000 as an average cost for a year in a nursing home. And so you can see how those savings multiply. I have former Representative Lee Greenfield with me today to talk specifically about the bill and what we are asking.
Many.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman, Representative Hausman. I don't mean to date either one of us, but it was in 1991 that you appeared before this committee, and I was chairing it, and we first funded the then 33 programs for the Living at Home Block Nurse Program. Since I've left the legislature and was asked to and serve on the statewide board, which is called Elderberry Institute, which is a resource center for the programs in the state.
Mr. Greenfield, I apologize, but if you could state your name for the record, we need sorry.
Lee Greenfield, chair of the Elderberry Institute Board. excuse me. The structure of the board is part of what's intriguing about the model that we represent and how it operates, and also makes chairing the board fun, if you like, a little internal tension. And that is, each of our programs is a program unto itself. Each is a 503 board, nonprofit board, responsible to the community it serves. And as a group, the separate board is the Elderberry Institute, an equal legally with the other programs. As Representative Hausman has pointed out to you, the wide range of services that we provide to the community by, in each community, a board that is part of that community and serves that community. And then the Elderberry Board serves as a resource center, as I mentioned. It is legislatively required to provide data analysis and reporting for the local programs to the Department of Human Services. I mention that particularly because while in the original legislation it also received funds to do that, when funds were very short a number of years ago, that funding was totally eliminated. So among other things, the Elderberry Board is, I think, uniquely the only body in the state that is required to provide services which it receives no funding for. But we are happy to continue to provide the services and maintain the programs, but we'll talk about that in a minute. The role is also to help strengthen the local programs and to ensure the continued growth of this model and additional programs throughout the state. There are 40, as was mentioned, nonprofit, community-owned, living-at-home block nurse programs. Representative Hausman has told you what services they provide. I want to emphasize that their object is to keep elders healthy, independent, and at home in their communities. And it does a great deal by providing volunteer services for them, kinds of services not just a medical model, which many programs provide, but a combination of a medical model and a social service model, providing whatever the community thinks that seniors need to remain independent in the community. And it's been mentioned, because of that combination of things and because of its local roots, we provide over 118,000 hours of volunteer service in a biennium. With that, let's introduce some of the people from our programs. Penny Feig.
Welcome to the committee. Just real quickly, though, I would like to introduce some guests that we have here today. They're ninth grade students at St. Louis Park High School, and they're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society's Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government Tour and Educational Program. So welcome to the committee. Okay, thank you. I apologize, and if you could state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, representatives, I'm Connie Feig. I'm the program director of the Atwater Area Living at Home Block Nurse Program. Atwater is a town of 1,050 people that is 85 miles directly west of Minneapolis on Highway 12. In 1988, the town of Atwater gathered together and shared concerns about support for their elders, knowing that the elders that remain in their own homes and in the community support the infrastructure of a small town and are of value to the whole community. They saw a model from St. Anthony Park, and they said, this is a model that would work for us, and proceeded to create the first rural site of the Living at Home Block Nurse Program. Like I said, this is community folks. The board members are made up of primarily elders in our community. They have hired me as a full-time director and a part-time volunteer coordinator. Our role is direct contact with the elders. We work directly out in the community. We have approximately 45 to 50 volunteers, and we have the youth groups that come and rake the lawns and help with the flowers in the spring and a variety of other youth projects that they participate in with our elders. In 2006, we provided 4,087 hours of volunteer service, and we helped 147 people, from little bits of help to lots of help. One of the things we do is pick up mail for folks. In our little town, there is no door-to-door mail service. It's all at the post office. And medications come from pharmacies 15 miles away. So that service of picking up the mail becomes an integral part of keeping someone in their own homes. And then we also have nurses and home health aides and everything across the spectrum to serve the person where they're at and what they need. Our volunteer base is really active. They agree that we need this elder-friendly community. I get calls and folks stopping by saying, how can I help? That's pretty awesome for this community-based project. I've also served the Elderberry Institute as a coach out in the rural areas. I've assisted the cities of Grove City and Granite Falls and Painesville create their own living-at-home block nurse programs, and currently I'm working with a gentleman who is creating a steering committee for the city of Wilmer to also create a living-at-home block nurse program. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Feig, and thank you for your work. I represent Painesville, so very aware.
And we have Margaret Magnus.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Magnuson, and you can say.
Thank you, and thank you for having me here today. It's such a pleasure to come back to where I started from in 1942, the state office building, my first job out of high school. So this is my first time back here in all those 65 years. So it's quite a pleasure in many ways, plus being here with you. May I just say that the Black Nurse Program is my beneficiary. It's the Conway Battle Creek Living at Home Black Nurse Program. I'm so grateful for it. My husband had Alzheimer's, and that's how I first became acquainted with him. And they have helped me and helped him in many, many ways, providing volunteers for rides. I lost my sight back in 99. I'm legally blind. And it's been such a help to know that there's somebody. I have no relatives in Minnesota, and I have a daughter and her family out in the state of Virginia. So I'm kind of at a loss, but I don't want to give up my home. This is my home. I was born and raised in St. Paul, lived in Duluth for about 13 years, and married someone from Duluth. And I'll tell you, this has been the most comforting thing that could ever happen to me. I feel so comfortable in my home today, knowing that I have people that will write checks for me, people that will come and visit me, people that I can help in some way by helping them through sadness in their lives. And I have done some of that. I have tried to counsel some people on different information that I've been aware of since I did volunteer for 6.5 years for what was once First Call for Help in St. Paul, now 211. And I am very, very blessed in every way. And I do wish that more people would volunteer, in that it gives you something that you don't get with money. It's a reward that you never will have otherwise. And I try to convince friends, and there's too many card games going out there. So I just don't get anywhere with it. But I tried, and I'll keep trying. And I'm so pleased that I have the director, Lynn Rabbits, who's done wonderful things for me. I dearly love her. She's like a second daughter to me. She was my volunteer to start with. And I guess I won her over. So I'm 85 years old and hoping to go on a little longer if God wants me to. And thank you for listening to me. It's been a pleasure being here.
Mr. Chair, as you can hear, the program promotes independent living, leverages community resources, it saves the state long-term care dollars, and it assures responsiveness to communities' unique needs and builds on the assets and strengths of each community, and that is why it is unique. And Mr. Greenfield is prepared to say more about the particular dollar amounts. I don't know how much time the committee has and what kind of detail you'd like about that.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. We do have some time. We are a little bit ahead of schedule. So, Mr. Green,
Mr. Chairman, if I could, of the 33 original slots for base funding, 31 are still in existence, and they get $20,000 a year. We are asking that, since it was 1991 when that was started, that be increased, and the proposal here is to increase it by $5,000 a year, so that base funding would be $25,000 per year per program. There are 9 programs that do not have base funding but have been getting community service grants from the Department of Human Services, and we propose that instead of doing that, they get blocked the base programming of whatever everybody else gets. The object is to have them all have the same, but the proposal is $25,000 per year each. And in addition, that some funding be restored for Elderberry Institute to carry out its role, and the request is $60,000 a year. It was $120,000, I believe, in 1991 when we started that function. And in addition, there are a number of communities that have inquired about starting up new programs. the major role of Elderberry Institute is something we want to get back at. Having base funding makes that a lot easier to perform. We're asking enough money to do 5 programs in 2008 and an additional 6 programs in 2009. We believe we would be able to do that if that base funding exists. So that is the request that we've put in front of you. And obviously, having been an old chair of this committee, everything's negotiable.
Thank you, Mr. Greenfield. Representative Otwalt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Greenfield may have just answered one of my questions, why we didn't have a fiscal note on this. Great program. In fact, I was going to mention, I think on Representative Hosh's Western Border over in Holdingford, there's actually a 5 parish program very much like this that has requested some funds too. So the state plays a role, but there are many other entities of our communities that are contributing to these kinds of efforts to keep seniors in their homes, and it's a wonderful program. But again, since we are a finance committee, I do wonder about the auto inflator and the fiscal note.
Mr. Chairman, we recognize some parts of the request are harder on legislators than others, and one is an automatic escalator. I think in all my years, I did serve 22 years and passed lots of bills. Once I got an automatic escalator, and the one that's for seniors living in nursing homes. But then again, we brought it to them to the legislature every year for about 5 years, and they surrendered. Members surrendered. But obviously, I understand the concern about that kind of thing. But I guess one of the reasons we put it in is to emphasize that it's something that has to be done at least occasionally. And you may not want to leave the automatic escalator in, but I do hope you provide something for the programs that have been around. And we do hope that rather than create a confusion of amounts, it would be particularly helpful to us as an organization if the amount for base amount for all programs was the same. So with those notes, the exact amount is something obviously up to you.
Chair, I think
would
Mr. Walsh make a comment about the fiscal note?
Yep, Mr. Walsh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, as has been stated, we do not have an official fiscal note, but just from some rough calculations from the bill and what Mr. Greenfield was saying, it sounds like the cost of the bill when fully implemented would be about $650,000 annually, and then the inflation built on top of that.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if I could offer at least a verbal amendment since Mr. Greenfield brought it up. I would like to eliminate the underlying language in 2.21 through 2.23. It's the automatic inflator, and it's not because I don't support the program. It's that I'm not in favor of an auto inflator, and I would encourage members to support that. It's on page 2, the underlying language 2.21 to 2.23.
Okay, Representative Gottwald makes an oral amendment. House File 1170 on lines 2.21 to 2.23 by striking the added language. Any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, could we hear from Representative Housman?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Representative Housman?
I will leave this one totally to the discretion of the committee.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would recommend we have this down, and then when we mark it up, we could look at it at that time.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Representative Hausman or Mr. Greenfield could just help us understand why this language is here. That would help me understand whether or not it should go.
I think in answer to the earlier question about that automatic inflator, we sometimes try to make that case. As you know, we're not often successful. He cited the one instance where there's an exception to that, but I think I would really totally leave this up to the will of the committee. I suspect that during markup of the bill, the reality of the budget will come home to roost on this anyway.
Mr. Greenfield.
Mr. Chairman, let me make, having said what I said, I think it is important to understand why people ask for it. It's not the easiest job in the world to come over here and ask for an inflator every 2 years. However, it does keep us responsible to the legislature and our funders. And so I don't have any great objection to that, but that's why the programs did want it, and it's understandable why. And to be very truthful, if in fact you were very flush, I might try to sneak it through. But it's going to get very strong scrutiny in a session like this and what you're facing. And so, you know, we might as well be open and honest about it. And I do leave it to your choice. I mean, the problem is the costs do go up, and they go up regularly. And it's fairly hard to come in all the time and ask for a small amount for each program. But it's important to, too. So.
Any further discussion on the Gottwald oral amendment? I know for me personally, I'd like to have an inflator involved. I mean, if you look at what we're dealing with just today, that we haven't done increased appropriations since 1996 for the bill that I just testified to. We're having the gas tax debate on so many different levels, and that if we don't address these issues on a year-in, year-out basis, the decisions only become more difficult. Many of them that we're faced with today. So I also agree that we should keep this language in the bill and not support the amendment. Any further discussion? Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just speaking to the amendment again, I think from the perspective of fiscal responsibility, again, this isn't about whether or not we support the program or even support the concept of adding cost when it's necessary. I think it's a matter of oversight and justification of need. If they need money, CPIU might be only 2% 1 year, and we might in fact have, as Mr. Greenfield suggested, more money and more need. The CPIU does not move necessarily at the rate of state revenue or the need of the program. And so while I understand the desire for an inflator, I think it isn't the appropriate mechanism. I think the legislature is the appropriate mechanism.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the author. I'm always a believer in keeping programs going and including the CPI, but would that be including the question of tails, and would that diminish the chances of this being included in this year's budget? Because it seems to me that with a lot of the one-time monies and also not so much money available, the items that have tails on them or continuing need for money might be shortchanged and put into the omnibus bill this year. Do you think that diminishes the chances?
Mr. Greenfield.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you can read that either way. One of the problems with an escalator is that requires the staff to decide on what is, and the legislators, what is going to happen in the next biennium, because those tails have to be accounted for with real sources of money. And so that makes it that much harder to fit the funding in. And so you can read it either way. I think it was important to put it in, get this discussion about it, because it's something that happens to every program. Of course, they're going to go up. Of course, they're going to go up. And you may be able to get away with a biennium or two of not funding it, of funding that increase. But then it comes home to roost. And if you do all the programs at once, it's a real problem. So I think the most important thing is to get some movement now, because it's been since 1991 yeah. that the $20,000 a year was set.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Peterson.
Just a follow-up comment. I think the program is really worthy, and we've listened to so many of these programs that are so worthy and needy and a lot of pent-up demand, and but this one certainly is a program for the future when you look at the demographics. And so I really would like to see it included. And I don't want to diminish its chances, so that's why I was asking the question.
Representative Talbot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I believe the inflation costs, I would like to keep it in place, because it will show us a true cost for the program. And as as members of the legislature, we have the right not to give the full amount if we choose not to down the road. And so, trying to be a responsible legislator, I think we need to know the true cost of not just this program. I think for all programs, and I would like to see this stay there. We could choose to give whatever amount later on. And so I recommend you vote this down and keep it in there, and we'll look at it first.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Greenfield, first of all, are there any federal matches for this program? And maybe I missed that because I came in.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, no.
And Mr. O'Connell, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Greenfield, why is it that programs like mine in Foley were not included in the base? Was that just part of the original creation of this program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, because in 1991 they weren't a program.
Thank you.
We do have one more question, Representative Bunn.
Just more of a comment. I'm very receptive to the issue of including some sort of inflation adjustments in a program, but this comes up with all the programs we looked at this entire, last 9 weeks or whatever, and I think it is more of a general discussion we need to have about how to adjust to inflation in the health and human service portion of budget in a very comprehensive way. I don't believe it should be automatic necessarily, but that we should take into account when we're preparing budgets every 2 years in some way and have that discussion about it. But I think to do it in one particular program and not, many of the programs we looked at is not really the way to proceed at this time. So I fully support the initiative and want to see it funded. I agree. I think with President Gottwald here that in any particular program we should be looking at this time.
I see no further discussion. Representative Gottwald renews his oral amendment. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Nay. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion to the bill. Representative Baker.
Just to the fiscal note. Sorry, dozing off here. Is there some evidence about people who don't go to nursing homes? The fiscal note I don't know was going to reflect savings on people that would have otherwise gone, and maybe that's part of the inability to have a dynamic fiscal note. But Representative Greenfield and Representative Hausman, is that going to be taken into consideration on the cost? Do you get credit for that?
I don't know, members, whether you have in your packet.
We have the note, but is that
preliminary? If not. It's not the. Yours isn't colored, but it looks like this, and they're very, very specific numbers. And my understanding is that at one point, I know the audit was conducted by the University of Minnesota. I don't know over time how that has continued, but you can see the dollars. First of all, the average cost to serve an elder compared to an average cost per year in the nursing home, and.
Yeah, Mr. Housen, I wasn't getting at the value. We have a fiscal note that's preliminary. Are they going to score those savings in the fiscal note to give you credit for that? Is there a way to capture, to identify those, with inflation will keep more people out and all that? And if not, it's too bad. So that's my only point. So.
Chair may correct me, but I'm guessing, as so often happens with prevention programs, that though we can talk about the cost savings, because the prevention dollars are perhaps out in the future, it's very difficult to quantify
them. Mr. Chairman, Representative, this is exactly what happens. It's not a one-on-one that you can show from one program to the other moving. These numbers are based on our tracking of how many people we serve, whether they stay out of nursing homes, and some measure of the professional staff, nursing staff, serve them, how many they think would need nursing home care if they weren't receiving them with the care provided in the home. But nobody's willing to score that, never has been. This is one of the problems of doing preventive care.
Any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this fiscal note, it shows new LAH/BNPs 14 and 31. That shows 45 for fiscal year 08, and then it goes to 09 where we pick up 51. Is that the way the bill is designed, is to pick up only a part of it? I know it shows the language showing going from 33 to 51, but the fiscal note only shows going from for fiscal year 08 of having 45 and then fiscal year 09 to 51. So I'm just concerned about the way the fiscal note is drawn. Maybe Mr. Walsh can give me some clarification.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Walsh is correct. The program is set up so five programs come on in the first year, fiscal year, in addition to the existing 40 programs, and then six are added in the second year of the biennium. It takes time to organize communities to set up these programs.
Thank you.
It comes down to
Mr. Chair,
since there's no further discussion, see a bill, Representative.
That, obviously, the representatives who serve these 40 programs are convinced. When I put out the word that I was introducing this and said the bill would be out there, it very quickly had many, many authors. I think it might be roughly 35, I'm not sure. And some of the representatives who came to my office to sign on even said that they had included this program in their campaign. So clearly, in those communities where this is happening, the value is well known. And thank you very much for being willing to hear the bill.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. I will renew the motion to lay over House File 1170 for a possible inclusion into the final omnibus bill. Thank you very much. The bill is laid over.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Johnson. I will move that House File 444 be laid over for possible inclusion to the final omnibus bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for that and for this motion. It's a great honor that I'm here before this committee to present this bill today. Listening to the testimony, I'm a little bit in awe and amazed at the quality of programs that you're having to review. There's some really good ones, clearly, and this is another excellent one that provides a great service to the state of Minnesota. And if you look at the bill, it's pretty straightforward. This bill restores the cuts that were made to senior nutrition, otherwise known as Meals on Wheels and congregate dining that occurred back in 2003. And then the second part also targets funding for innovative methods of delivering services to persons facing language or cultural barriers, persons with special diets, and persons living in isolated rural areas. Rather than me talking on about what a great program is, I'm going to turn over to my testifiers here. I have a few of them. We are aware of the time. We'll try not to run over too much, but I'll turn over to my friends here to my right.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Shepard Harris. I'm here on behalf of the Jewish Community Relations Council, which is the public affairs voice for the Jewish community. We have a spectrum of human services that we provide on an annual basis to 60,000 Minnesotans, Jew and non-Jew alike. And I'd just like to, before I introduce who we lovingly call Grandma Zelda here, I just wanted to mention a couple of things to you. First of all, I want to thank Representative Johnson on his leadership with this bill. This is actually cycle number two we're on this bill. So hopefully this will be the last cycle that we're on this bill. Also want to thank the committee for hearing this bill. I just want to draw your attention. There's a handout, and if I could summarize it for you very quickly. Basically, it's pretty basic. It shows that the since 2003, when there were the budget cuts, the number of meals, the number of clients, and the number of meals have increased greatly, while the funding for this program at the St. Paul Jewish Community Center has remained relatively flat. As a result, we have reduced some of the senior services. We've shifted some funding around. Some of the other senior services have been reduced or eliminated. And what makes this even more challenging is we can't currently reach some of our seniors who are specifically on religious diets, kosher meals specifically. We can't reach even in Representative Johnson's district. We are unable to reach them. Fortunately, Grandma Zelda lives near the St. Paul Jewish Community Center, and we're able to reach her. And we're also currently evaluating closing down the senior congregate dining program. So, again, that's why we thank Representative Johnson for bringing this bill forward. So, without further ado, I'd like to turn it over to Grandma Zelda.
Thank you, Mr. Harris, and welcome to the committee, Ms. Katz or Grandma Zelda. If you can state your name for the record, too.
I'm here to speak about the... I'm Grandma Zelda. I'm here to speak about the kosher meals on wheels. These meals are prepared by Sholem Home East and are delivered to me 5 days a week. These meals are very nourishing and very healthy for me. I enjoy these meals. I hope that I will be able to continue to get these meals. It's very important because I don't cook for myself. I'm 89 years old, I live alone, and I rely on these kosher meals that are prepared by Sholem Home East. I hope that you will pass this bill and that we old age people will continue to get these meals. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The next testifier, please.
I hate to follow that.
You can follow. You
did a great job. I was with you in the Senate when you did it.
Wonderful.
My name is Carolyn Tonneson, Mr. Chair and representatives. I am the Executive Director of Metro Meals on Wheels. We represent 40 Meals on Wheels programs that are located in the 7-county area here in the metropolitan area. But, of course, I'm sure you're aware that there are Meals on Wheels programs throughout the entire state of Minnesota, hundreds of them in many small communities as well as the larger communities. Because we are more of a centralized agency here in the Twin Cities representing the meals here, we have a centralized phone number, and we hear a lot of the stories, whether it's from clients like Ms. Katz, or whether it's from volunteers or from referral sources or family members. We hear the importance of the service that is being provided every day. Here in the Twin Cities, there are over a million meals that are provided in a year's time. And so it's a pretty important service. One of the important things that I think I'd like you to hear is that Meals on Wheels programs are struggling to meet the needs of their clients and their current caseloads. There's a significant gap between costs and reimbursement, and that's what this bill is about, and we thank Representative Johnson for bringing this forward. Programs have to get creative about how to meet that gap, and every program kind of does whatever works for them in their specific locality. I can give you one example. I can give you many examples. I will give you one. There's a suburb in southwest Minneapolis that found that some of their clients were dropping off the roll and stopping their meals. And when they inquired into that, they found that they were people that didn't meet the income guidelines for government funding, and so they were on a self-pay, and they simply could not pay the self-pay cost, which I believe at that time, about a year ago, that program was at $3.75 per meal. And, of course, that does not cover the cost of the meal, the $375. So they instituted an Adopt-a-Senior program, and they asked churches and Lions Clubs and service clubs and others to help pay for these meals for persons that fall in that gap that are not able to pay for their own. That was an innovative way to do it. It has been replicated by a few others, but it doesn't work in every community. So other communities, other localities need to find their own way of filling that gap, and they struggle with that. Some of them simply aren't able to pick up the entire cost. Another important point. Well, let me see with that, too, that the costs are escalating. We all know that food costs escalate. We go to the grocery store, and the funding is not following that escalation of costs. So the gap that is always there becomes a little larger and a little larger. Another important point is right now there are immigrant and other cultural populations that are not being served. And the cost to prepare a meal, as Mr. Harris pointed out, in a cultural specific way, is at least double the cost of regular meals. There are a few programs that are currently set up to meet needs. Kosher Meals in both Hennepin and Ramsey County is one example of that. There's also a program in Ramsey County that serves Asian Meals on Wheels. But they struggle because the funding is simply not there and their costs are so much more. So unless some additional funding is found, those current programs will need to restrict their availability and turn people away, and other programs who have immigrant populations in their neighborhoods are unable to begin serving cultural-specific meals due to the high costs. So those are two important trends that programs are finding across the board, that gap between cost and reimbursement and the inability to adequately serve cultural-specific meals. And one other trend that I'd like to just talk about briefly that we're beginning to see, and we know it's going to grow, is that we receive calls on a regular basis from people who need choices that go beyond what the current programs can offer. That includes such things as more than one meal a day. They aren't making it on just one meal. Additional weekend meals, because just about every program delivers those meals Monday through Friday, but they're not delivering them Saturday and Sunday. Many of them will do additional meals on Thursday and Friday to get them through the weekend, but there's still a gap there. We have people now entering the Meals on Wheels era of their life that want to have some control and choice over what they're eating. The National Association for Meals on Wheels Programs is reporting that choice is the biggest challenge that Meals on Wheels programs will need to face in the future. So that's another trend that we see and we know is going to increase, because we're all aware that over 60 and then over 80 segment of the population is growing and growing. So that's the point behind the funding that we would like to have restored. We can't do these things unless the funding is there to adequately pay for the basic costs of the basic meals, and that's what House Bill 444 is all about. It's about keeping people nutritionally healthy and in their own homes for as long as possible. It's not just a good cost savings idea. It's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tonneson.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Darlene Morgenstern-Locke. I work for Lutheran Social Services of Minnesota in Senior Nutrition. I'm an assistant director. And I live in Bemidji and manage four counties in northern Minnesota. In those counties, I'm in charge of 16 sites in Beltrami, Hubbard, Clearwater, and Lake of the Woods counties. We offer both congregate dining at my sites and Meals on Wheels. I'm here because I want you to know how important senior nutrition is and how hard we are struggling to keep sites open in the rural areas of northern Minnesota. We are faced with all of those same things that they're faced with, but we also have the problem of distance. We deliver meals out into the rural areas, sometimes 20 miles or more to people. So I've been working for senior nutrition for about 7 years, and it's been extremely challenging to keep my sites open due to that extra expense of the delivery of meals, but then also the rising cost of food. And even we're paying a surcharge on getting the food delivered to our sites up there. So that's been a real challenge. Some of the sites that I manage are in very rural areas, so the program means even more for those people. They're very isolated in those areas because of their location. And many times that the person, the only person that the participant sees is the volunteer who delivers that meal. The daily visit provides for safety and security for the seniors as well as providing them that nutritious meal. On many occasions, staff or volunteers have really been able to help a senior in need and many times even save their life. An example is Barb Jacobson, who lives in Park Rapids. She's 85 years old. She had been attending congregate meals every day, and one day she didn't show up. And my dining manager thought, well, that just isn't right. So she called the family, and they went to check on her, and here she had had a stroke, and she was lying behind the door. She couldn't move, you know, and she would have surely died if we had not come upon her. So, and I can tell you many, many stories like that, many stories of how we've actually saved lives by showing up in, you know, getting the right help for that person. Barb Jacobson is healthy now, and she attends daily meals at one of the apartment complexes in Park Rapids where we serve meals, congregate meals now. The other thing about senior nutrition is that many of the seniors that we serve live on very limited incomes, and they choose between food, medicine, utilities on a regular basis. And so we offer them the option of donating what they feel they can afford towards the cost of that meal. And many people are not able to donate, but we never turn anyone away for, you know, being unable to donate. And in fact, it's confidential, you know. But we've had people come to us and, you know, and just say, we can't afford to donate, and it's, you know, we need to serve those people. So we help them in that way, too, and that's why it's important. And also, it gives them more buying power because they can donate on the basis of what they feel they can afford to purchase those other necessities that they have to have, their, you know, their medicine and clothing and things like that. The other thing is a social outlet for those people. The people who come to the congregate dining sites, many of them, that's the only socialization that they have. They can't afford to do other things. So it's important for them to be able to come there and make friends and visit with people that are their own age. And that also helps to keep them healthy mentally as well as physically. And we know that nutritionally balanced meals are important to the health of our seniors and allows them to remain in their own homes for as long as possible. We've done surveys. Seniors tell us that themselves. Many have told us that, you know, they wouldn't be in their own homes if it wasn't for the Meals on Wheels. And the congregate diners appreciate that equally as much, too, because that's their socialization. We've seen them blossom if someone loses their spouse, and we've seen them blossom when they start coming to the center and they start enjoying life again. And so it's made a huge difference in their lives, too. So, you know, that's important as well. The cost is much less than caring for those people in a long care facility or nursing home or institutional care. So please consider the importance of a healthy meal and warm community in the life of each senior in Minnesota, and I ask you to please support Bill HF-444 to ensure that these essential services continue in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name.
Darlene Morgenstern-Locke.
Oh, okay. To the testifier, Ms. Morgenstern-Locke. I'm a Lutheran, and I know I donate to Lutheran Social Services, but can you tell me to what extent our churches do support the cash, 6%, on the circle graph on the back side of the Lutheran Social Services brochure?
Yeah.
In other words, madam, I'm wondering, is that the direct support that comes from our church giving to Lutheran Social Services or not?
Well, when you donate through your church, you know, for the congregational gifting, if you designate that money to go to senior nutrition, then it will go to senior nutrition or whatever program you designate to. Otherwise, it goes to the general fund, which is used by all, all programs.
Thank you. That was a very important answer because now we Lutherans know we should designate.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you for telling me that. I will do that from now on. Representative Johnson, Representative Hosh, may I ask another question?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, are you using one-time money in the targeted grants and then expecting the appropriation, as I note in your bill, to become part of base funding then to move into our general fund funding thereafter?
That's correct, Representative Erickson. Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, if the as the programs prove effective, that they would become part of the general fund base.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe this is a follow-up that Representative Johnson and his testifiers can, who are administrators in the program, can look at. I note that, at least from the handout on Ramsey County, that about a half of the people served are on medical assistant waivers programs, which this committee has jurisdiction over. And it notes that the $6.08 payment that they get for people who are on the MA waivered programs isn't enough to, you know, cover the cost of that. And one way we might be able to invest additionally in this program would be to increase that reimbursement rate, where we would get half of it contributed by the federal government. And as we're moving to put together our budget here in this committee, I would encourage Representative Johnson to work with our staff and look at if we might be able to get some federal money in to help deal with this situation, because I think it's a great program. It's a lifeline for a lot of people, and I never like to leave federal dollars on the table.
Thank you, Representative Lapa.
Any further questions to the bill? Representative Johnson?
Well, thank you, patience and attentiveness of the committee. This is clearly a great bill that, you know, aims toward providing nutritious meals and kind human contact, and I appreciate your favorable review of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Thank you to all the testifiers for coming today. It's appreciated. With no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 444 be laid over for possible inclusion into the final omnibus bill. With that, there's no further discussion or bills on the agenda, so we are adjourned.